Chapter 6. Telling the Families. At the Johnson home, Julie, Maria, and Abby were all panicking. They could not reach any of their husbands by phone, while more and more frightful information was being announced over the TV. It was reported that a bomb had been detonated, and there were mass casualties, with multiple deaths. Images of the blast site were not being displayed on TV, but only a distant view, which included the deluge of emergency vehicles and their flashing lights. Julie was thinking the worst, with tears streaming and half crying. She grabbed her purse and said, "Something is not right. I know Dave would have called. I've got to go to him. I can't stay here. I've got to go find Dave." As Julie moved toward the door, Abby jumped up and blocked the doorway, saying, "No, you can't go. You can't drive right now." Abby also began to cry, then added, "None of us should be driving right now." Abby embraced Julie and said, "For now, all we can do is wait. The guys know where we are. They'll call us when they can." Maria was hopeful and agreed, saying, "We have to sit tight for now, and wait. It would take us 45 minutes just to drive to the stadium, and we might get a call at any time." Julie reluctantly sat back down on the couch, clinching her phone with Abby and Maria by her side. Just then Julie's phone rang, and she was quick to answer. "Dave, Dave, is this you?"
"No, Mom, it's me, Davey."
It was their son Davey calling, to see if his mom had heard from his dad. He asked, "Have you heard from Dad? Is he on his way home?"
Let down, Julie hesitated for a moment, then answered, "No, dear. I have not heard from your father at all.
Have you been watching the news about the bomb blast at the Alamo Center?"
Davey replied, "Yes, it's so crazy it's hard to imagine. I've not heard anything from Dad either."
Then he asked, "How about Mac and Juan? Has anyone there heard from them?"
"No, dear," Julie replied. "I'm still here at my house with Maria and Abby, and we have not heard from any of the guys. I was thinking about going to the stadium to look for them."
Davey emphatically replied, "No, Mom, you stay put, and I'll go. I'm a lot closer than you. I'll keep you posted, and if you hear anything at all from Dad, call me."
Julie relented. "Okay, but Davey, stay safe and drive careful." She remained worried about the dangers and chaos at the Alamo Center.
Davey understood her concerns, because he knew the traffic would be chaotic, and attempted to reassure her, saying, "Mom, I promise to be careful. I'll find Dad, and you stay put. I'll be sure to keep you posted. Bye, for now." After a deep sigh, Julie looked at Maria and Abby and gave them an update. "Well, Davey is going to the stadium to look for the guys. He promised to keep us posted." The wives felt so overwhelmed with helplessness, just sitting and waiting, but at least Davey was en route. Calling from the Alamo Center parking lot, Max spoke to the Canyon Lake police and explained the situation. They understood, and agreed to send officers to the Johnson home right away, to deliver the sad news. Max's next mission was to find out which hospital Dave was taken to, so he went back to the scene of the explosion, hoping for some answers. The police were preventing people from entering the area, so Mac approached a police officer standing guard for help. "My friend was hurt bad, and he was taken away in an ambulance. Do you know what hospital they took him to?" The police officer replied, "If he is hurt bad, they probably took him to University Hospital. People with less serious injuries are being sent to both the Baptist Medical Center and the Methodist Hospital. We don't have a list here as to who is going to which hospital. Dispatch is trying to track where the injured are sent to." Mac asked if he could talk to someone at dispatch. The officer replied, "Not likely, everyone is too busy. The hospitals are busy also. For now, I think you'll just have to pick a hospital and go to the emergency room to see if you can find your friend." For the time being, Dave remained lost somewhere in the hospital system. Mac left the stadium and started running in the general direction of University Hospital. He had in mind to call a rideshare once he was far enough away from the stadium. He glanced at his phone and saw that Abby had already called him many times, so Max slowed down to respond to Abby with a text. He typed, "Too busy to talk, I will call you when I can." At the Johnson house, Abby yelled out excited, "It's Mac, he just sent me a text." Julie and Maria were super quick to race to Abby's side, attempting to get a look at her phone, asking, "What did he say?" As they tried to look on, Abby read the message out loud. He said, "Too busy to talk, I will call you when I can." With a sense of relief, Julie commented,
That's a good sign, because the guys were together. Then she asked, what about Dave? Did he say anything about Dave and Juan?
No, Abby replied, that's it, no real news.
Maria requested that Abby text Mac back, and ask Mac to tell Juan and Dave to call or text us. As Abby messaged back, Julie said, girls, instead of calling, let's try texting the guys, maybe the texts will get through. But for Abby, she was immensely relieved by Mac's text, knowing that he was well enough to send a text. Mac was on the move and ignored Abby's texts, focusing on making headway toward University Hospital. That's when Mac identified a call coming in from Davey. He thought for a moment, but came to the conclusion that he didn't think Davey was at the house with the Wides. So Mac took the call and immediately asked, Davey, do you know about the bomb at the Alamo Sports Center tonight?
Yes, Davey replied. I tried driving there in my truck, but I couldn't get close, all the roads are blocked.
Mac hesitated for a moment, then said, Davey, your dad got hurt, and an ambulance took him to a hospital. I'm not sure, but I think they took him to University Hospital, I'm trying to get there right now.
Davey went silent, he was stunned hearing about his dad being hurt.
Mac asked, Davey, did you hear what I said?
Davey finally replied, yeah, I heard what you said. Where are you, Mac?
Mac responded, I'm on foot at the intersection of Houston Street and Live Oak Street, near a hospitality inn, can you pick me up?
Davey agreed, yeah, I'll pick you up. Then added, but first I've got to call my mom.
Mac quickly replied with an emphatic, no, you can't call your mom yet.
Mac explained, Maria is at your mom's house.
Mac hesitated, then sadly continued, Juan was killed by the blast.
Mac paused again, just long enough to take in a deep breath.
If you call your mom, Maria is going to ask about Juan. Hearing about Juan will terrify your mom. First we need to find your dad.
Davey went silent, as he took in the terrible news about Juan, and the possibility that his dad might also be hurt badly.
Davey and Juan were good friends, and had shared a lot of good times together at his dad's house. In spite of the heart-crushing news about Juan, finding his dad took on a new sense of urgency.
Eventually, Mac asked, Davey, did you hear everything I just said about Juan and your dad?
Finally, Davey responded, yeah, I heard you, let's go find my dad. I know where the hospitality inn is, I'll be there in a few minutes. Keep an eye out for me, I'm driving my blue truck.
It wasn't long before Davey had picked up Mac in front of the hotel, and they were heading toward University Hospital.
Meanwhile, Sam and Violet had returned to University Hospital, having just transported another patient to the emergency room. This time, Violet accompanied the transport patient into the emergency room. The woman had sustained a severe head injury with facial wounds. While Violet attended to the woman's medical needs, Sam ensured the ambulance was safely parked and out of the way. After Violet had fully turned her patient over to the care of the hospital staff, she inquired about the fate of the man they had transported earlier. With a heavy heart, she learned that he had succumbed to his injuries shortly after arriving. Apparently, the hospital staff was never able to revive him. The news was a harsh reminder of the gravity of their work, and the fragility of human life. She also pondered about the promise she made to a dying man, and that she was now the keeper of his last wish. Exiting the hospital, Violet had just walked out of the door used by emergency room and ambulance personnel. A short distance away, Mac and Davey were approaching the emergency room entrance. Mac recognized her and was surprised. Pointing his finger at her, he said, "It's you, the paramedic that bandaged up my friend tonight. You transported him to the hospital too, right?"
Violet was also surprised, saying, "I remember you, you're his friend, and you went to the game together."
"Yes, you remember me," Mac replied as they approached each other. "This is Davey, my friend's son. Where's my friend Dave? Is he here at this hospital?"
Davey quickly asked, "Can you tell us where my dad is?"
With a deeply concerned look, Violet replied, "He is here at this hospital. Has anyone talked to you about your dad's medical condition yet?"
Mac quickly answered for Davey, "No, we're just getting here, we've not even seen Dave yet, or talked to anybody about him."
Violet hesitated for a moment, giving some thought to the situation. Then speaking to Davey, she said, "I brought him here, but I never got his name.
What is your dad's name?"
Mac cut in again, and answered for Davey, "The name on his driver's license would be David Johnson. I call him Dave. Violet seemed to be stressed to hear his name. Knowing his name further humanized her patient, strengthening her compassion and empathy for the situation. It wasn't her role to provide this kind of bad news to family members, but this was an unusual night. But she had to get this right, which meant she had to know for sure. After Violet gave it some thought, she responded, "Wait right here. I'll go inside and see what I can find out. I'll be right back." Violet bypassed the waiting room and went directly inside into the emergency room area. Then she approached the nurse's station, hoping to collect more information. She inquired as to the identity of the person she brought in earlier. The nurse told her that they found his wallet, and that his name is David Johnson, but his identity has not been officially confirmed. Violet asked, "Can I see his driver's license?" The nurse showed Violet the driver's license, and she took a photo of it with her phone. "Are you sure this guy died? I've got to know for sure." The nurse replied, pointing her finger, "I'm absolutely certain, he is still in that staging room right over there." Violet followed the nurse's directions toward the room, her heart pounding in her chest as she peered through the glass window in the door. She needed to be certain, to confirm that the man she had transported earlier was indeed the victim lying on one of these beds. As she entered the room, she was confronted with a chilling scene. Two rolling trauma beds stood side by side, their occupants shrouded beneath bloody sheets. Her gaze lingered on the first bed. There was a moment of hesitation, before she could summon the courage to pull back the sheet. Beneath lay a woman's face, her features marred by injury. It was a very sad sight to witness, but this was clearly not David. As Violet turned to the second bed, she wondered, could this be the man she had transported? She hoped with all her might that it wasn't. She approached cautiously, her hand hovering over the sheet. Gathering her strength, she pulled the sheet back, revealing the face of a lifeless man. It was him. The person she had transported in the ambulance. The man whose name and face matched the driver's license. The same man who conveyed his dying wish to Violet. Dave was dead. The realization struck Violet like a physical blow, leaving her numb and weak. Tears welled up in her eyes as she looked down at his lifeless form. She whispered with her voice barely audible, "David, I'm so sorry. I tried my best, but I failed. I'm so, so very sorry." Once again, she thought about the promise she made him, a seemingly incredible mission. Violet gently covered Dave's face, her heart heavy with sorrow. As she slowly left the emergency room, a couple of nurses watched her depart, and they noticed her stress and sadness. Their eyes were filled with compassion. It was indeed a sadness they all shared on a night like tonight. Reaching the door, Violet hesitated, her hand hovering over the knob. She took a moment to collect herself, wiping away the tears that streamed down her face. As she stepped outside, she knew the task she was about to be faced with, a conversation with Davy and Mac that was going to be heartbreaking. Davy and Sam were still waiting where she had left them. The guy saw her coming, and anxiously went over to meet her. With an optimistic voice, Davy was quick to ask, "Did you find my dad? Is he okay?" Violet opened her phone, and then showed them the photo of Dave's driver's license that she had taken. "Is this your dad?" Mac was looking onto the phone also, and Davy answered, "Yes, that's my dad. Can you take me to him?" After a pause, and with Mac listening, Violet answered, "Your dad passed away. He didn't make it." Davy was speechless as a chill swept over him. He stumbled backwards, then slowly walked away and sat down on a nearby bench. Mac turned away from Violet to hide his tears, and he cried out loud, "Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God." Mac turned back to Violet with a tearful, crying voice. "Maybe you're wrong, with all this craziness tonight, maybe somebody else died, but not Dave, maybe it was somebody else." Mac was desperate for a different answer, one in which his friend Dave was still alive. Violet answered, trying to be as compassionate as she could, saying, "I just went inside and saw the guy that you said at the Alamo Center was your friend, the same guy that I brought here. This is his driver's license. He is still in a room adjacent to the emergency room's trauma center. I just saw him, and your friend Dave is definitely not alive anymore. I'm sorry, but he was hurt badly, and he went into cardiac arrest just as we arrived at the hospital." Violet slowly shook her head, then softly said, "He didn't survive." She looked over at Davy sitting on the bench, then back at Mac. Violet asked, "What is your name?" He replied, "My name is Mac, Mac Thompson." "Well, Mac, your friend Dave needs something from you, right now. See the guy on that bench over there? That's Dave's son. Your friend Dave needs for you to help his son get through this, starting right this second." Mac nodded while wiping the tears from his face. "Okay, I understand. I can do this." As Mac began to walk over to Davey, Violet grabbed his arm and she said, "Go into the emergency room, there are counselors in there that will help you." Mac understood and nodded his head. Then she added, "Mac, one more thing. When the time is right, Dave gave me something very special to give to his family." Clinching her phone, she said, "I'll reach out at a better time." Mac went over to Davey, sat down next to him, and then put his arm around him. Violet had done all she could do here, and she needed to get back to the Alamo Center. Violet made her way over to the ambulance and Sam. After she got into the ambulance, Sam pulled out of the parking lot and began their journey back to the stadium. Sam asked, "What took so long?" Violet didn't answer, and sat quietly sobbing. Violet was well experienced as a paramedic, and had participated rescuing people from tragedies for years. It was commonplace for her to deal with the emotions of families in turmoil, through all types of injuries and catastrophes. But tonight was the first time she had to tell someone that a loved one had died, that a son would never see his dad again. It had always been someone else's job to talk to the family and break the sad news. Tonight, Violet was cornered into going out of her comfort zone, but the circumstances were extraordinary. She was determined not to leave Dave's son Davey and Mac hanging, left to figure things out on their own. She did what she could, and then she moved on. Sam could clearly see that Violet was upset, so he asked, "Violet, what's wrong?" Violet looked over at Sam and replied, "I don't want to talk about it." She turned away, staring out the window, and remained silent. A minute later, dispatch came across the radio. Dispatch had informed them that their rescue and transportation duties for the night were complete. They were to proceed to the Alamo Center and find Detective Frank Benson, that he would be in a mobile command center near the scene of the explosion. Amid the turmoil at the Johnson House, none of the wives were having any luck with contacting their husbands. Meanwhile, all the local TV stations and national news networks were broadcasting continuous live coverage from the stadium. The latest update claimed that the explosion was likely a terrorist attack, that there were dozens of casualties, and at least 7 deaths. Maria asked, "Julie, have you heard anything from Davey?" Julie sadly replied, "No, nothing." Julie tried calling Davey again, but like before, there was no answer. Because Abby had heard from Mac, she was doing better with the stress of waiting than the other ladies. Her greatest concerns were now for Dave and Juan. Out of the blue, the doorbell rang at the Johnson House. Julie, Maria, and Abby all jumped up and ran to the door and opened it. At the door was a uniformed police officer, along with a man and 2 women dressed in ordinary civilian clothes. In the driveway were a couple of City of Canyon Lake police cars. The wives instinctively knew that this was not good, and their hearts sank. The police officer asked, "Is this the home of Julie Johnson?" Fearful, Julie was slow to answer, "Yes, that's me." The officer asked, "May we come inside and talk with you? Mac Thompson told us we could find all of you here." Abby stepped forward, "Yes, all of you, please come inside." Julie was quick to ask, "Are you here to tell us news about our husbands?" As the city's representatives walked inside, the police officer inquired, "Have all of you been following the news about the explosion at the Alamo Center tonight?" Sensing she was about to hear some really bad news, Julie was becoming increasingly distraught. With tears in her eyes, she angrily yelled, "Just tell us about our husbands, right now, why are you here?" The man dressed in civilian clothes spoke up, "My name is Mike Weaver, I'm the pastor at the Canyon Lake Baptist Church, and this is my wife Cindy, and a friend of ours, Patty." Pointing at Abby while looking at some notes on a piece of paper, "You must be Abby." Then pointing toward Maria, "And you must be Maria, do I have this right?" The wives nodded, then the pastor continued, "Abby, your husband Mac called the Canyon Lake Police Department and conveyed information, and asked for us to come here to speak with you in person, to tell you what Mac told the police." Abby was feeling somewhat at ease, hearing Mac was capable of talking to the police. was a good indication that he was fine. Meanwhile, stress was building and boiling over in both Julie and Maria. So much so, that Julie was panicking, and interrupted the pastor yelling again, "Just tell us. What is going on with our husbands?" Nodding his head, the pastor complied, and said, "Okay, Julie, your husband Dave, he was injured and taken to a hospital. At this time, we don't know what his condition is, and we don't know what hospital he was taken to." Hearing the news, Julie became overwhelmed and weak, almost fainting. Abby quickly put her arm around her, and helped her sit down on the couch. "Abby, your husband Mac is unharmed, and is trying to locate what hospital Dave was taken to." Both Julie and Abby compassionately looked over at Maria, as the pastor continued speaking. "Maria, I'm very sad to say, your husband Juan, was killed in the blast, he died immediately." Maria was speechless. She had an empty gaze, as she slowly sat down on the couch. Abby and others in the room tried to comfort her, but she gave no response, as if she was detached from her surroundings. Maria slowly put her head down on the couch and closed her eyes. Her silent tears, falling onto the arm of the couch. Though, surrounded by her friends, she was withdrawing from everything, as if her life seemed to have stopped, and the world was passing her by. Julie, with tears in her eyes, stood up and reached out to Pastor Mike with a crying plea. She demanded, "I need for you to take me to my husband. I have to be by his side. I'm sure he needs me." Mike replied, "I will, but first we need to find out where he is. It's possible that Mac may have already found him. I'll start calling around and see if I can find out which hospital Dave is at." Julie was dazed and not speaking so well. "Okay, my son Davey, out looking for Dad also. Maybe we'll hear from Davey soon." Davey and Mac were still seated on the bench outside the hospital. They were just sitting there, surrounded by the silence of the night, and wiping away their tears, just thinking, and reliving memories. Mac looked over at Davey and asked, "Davey, do you want to go inside and see your dad?" Davey slowly looked over at Mac, then replied, I'm afraid to go look. Like, seeing my dad laying there, is going to be like a punch in my face. And somehow, I'll hurt even more." Tears were streaming down Davy's face. "Mac, I'm feeling so empty and helpless just sitting here on this bench. I just want to go to sleep and never wake up." After pausing for a moment, he added, "If only I had gone to the game, maybe I could have saved him." Concerned that Davy might be blaming himself for his dad's death, Mac replied, saying, "I was there. I had just stepped away moments before to get us a rideshare. We had no clue. No warning that a terrorist was about to strike, and I'm sure this was a terrorist attack. There is nothing you could have done to save your dad." After pausing for a moment, Mac added, "Don't blame anyone but the terrorist. It's what he did. He did it on purpose to all of us." "What about my mom?" Davey asked. "She knows I'm out here somewhere looking for Dad. I'm supposed to call her. She's expecting me to call her. What do I say to my mom? What should I do?" Just then Mac received a text from Abby. The text read, "Have you found Dave? There are people here from the city and they told us about Dave and Juan. Julie is freaking out. She needs to find Dave. I hear you are okay. I love you." Mac explained to Davey about how he had called the city of Canyon Lake Police Department, asking them to send people over to his mom's house. The plan was for the police to let them know about Juan, and that your dad was taken to a hospital. Also, that he was looking for his dad, trying to find out what hospital they took him to. Feeling more confident about what to do next, Mac shared his thoughts. "Davey, we have to let you mom know. Right now, there are people from the city at your mom's house. From here, it's about a 45-minute drive to your parents' house, and we should get on the road immediately. But, we have to be sure that your mom doesn't go out looking for your dad. I think we should talk with one of these city people, so that they can tell her about your dad while everyone is still there." Davey thought for a moment, then answered, "I have to get to my mom right away. She's going to need me. But I think you're right. Tell Abby to have one of these city people call you, and you talk to them, and tell them about Dad." Mac replied a text back to Abby that read, "Secretly have one of the city people go outside with your phone, and have them call me, I'll be standing by." Mac looked over at Davey, it sent, "I should be getting a phone call any minute. After I finish this call, we'll head straight for your mom's house. I'll drive. Davy gave a silent nod of agreement. Abby received Mac's text. Then she discreetly signaled to Pastor Mike. He followed her tactfully into the kitchen to see what she wanted. Abby showed Mike her text message from Mac, her eyes filled with a mix of concern and curiosity. She whispered to Mike, "Go out on the back porch, use my phone, and call this number." After she pulled up Mac's phone number, she handed over her phone saying, "Go now," directing him with a commanding tone. Mike nodded, taking the phone from Abby's hand. He exited the kitchen through a back door, disappearing into the night on the back patio. Abby casually kept an eye on everybody in the living room from the kitchen, ready to shield the pastor from intrusion. A moment later, Mac's phone rang, startling him from his thoughts. He answered, "This is Mac Thompson." The voice on the other end responded, "My name is Pastor Mike Weaver. I'm the pastor at Canyon Lake Baptist Church. Do you have information for me about Dave?" "Yes, I do," Mac replied, stepping away from Davy to maintain some privacy. "I'm here with Davy, he's Dave and Julie's son. We found Dave at University Hospital." "Excellent," Mike said, with his voice filled with hope. "Not really," Mac replied, his voice heavy with sorrow. "It's not good news." He paused, struggling to find the words, then said, "Dave passed away shortly after arriving here, Dave is gone." "Oh my," Mike gasped, his voice filled with shock and his hope dashed. Mac continued, "Davy and I are going to leave University Hospital right now, and go directly to where you are, the Johnson's home. It'll take us about 45 minutes to get there. We both have decided that we want you to tell Julie about Dave's death, and let her know that her son Davy and I are on our way there. We'll get there as quickly as we can, and please, don't let Julie leave the house. Can you handle this?" "I'll do my best," Mike assured him. "There are several people here who can help out until you get here." "Okay, we're on our way," Mac replied, hanging up the phone. He turned to Davy, his hand outstretched. "Give me your keys. We're heading for your parents' house." Davy's eyes pleaded for help as he handed over his keys. Although Mac tried his best to be discreet when talking to the pastor, Davy heard every word. Just hearing the words discussing his dad's death were so incredibly profound and unwelcome, they added a fresh wave of heartache that swept over Davy. The sadness that came from referring to his dad in the past tense was incomprehensible. Davy's dad had always been his hero, and his dad had been by his side his entire life. Unexpected, and in an instant, Davy's hero and role model had been ripped away by an evil act. He also wondered how his children would react to their grandfather being taken away forever, and taken so violently. Sam and Violet made it back to the stadium and were walking over to the mobile command center. Violet had remained completely silent, deep in thought since they left the hospital. It is commonplace for EMTs to deal with emotional situations. But what happened at the Alamo Center this evening was over the top, dreadful. Sam recognized that Violet was having difficulty coping. Finally, breaking the silence, Sam reached out to her, saying, "They are going to ask us a lot of questions. They're going to want to know everything we know." Violet glanced over at Sam without saying a word, and she just kept walking. They stopped outside the command center before opening the door, and Sam added, "Violet, I'll take the lead on answering questions, and I'll do the best that I can, but I don't know everything that happened here tonight. I realize you're upset, but you need to keep it together when we go inside. At some point, you'll have to open up." Violet nodded, her resolve was hardening. After they both took a deep breath, they went into the command center. The command center was busy with witnesses being interviewed, and people coming and going. Most of the officers in the command center were wearing plain clothes. As they walked in, Sam gave a small friendly wave and said, "Hi everybody, I'm Sam Harris and this is Violet Wheeler, we're fire department EMTs, and we are here to see Frank Benson." An officer near the door pointed toward the end of the command center and said, "Go all the way down, it is the office at the end." Sam and Violet made their way through the command center and knocked on the door. Frank opened the door and immediately recognized Sam and Violet from the previous night and greeted them. "You two again? All right, come in and close the door." Sam and Violet took a seat, then Frank began his questioning. It's my understanding that you two were the first people to spot the bombers. What made you think they were terrorists? Sam answered, "We took an injured player to the hospital, and we were just getting back to the stadium. People were beginning to leave because the game was almost over. With everyone trying to leave, the car with the bombers was in a super big hurry to get to the stadium. They cut us off, and I had to slam on the brakes to avoid a collision. That got our attention." After thinking for a few seconds, Sam continued, "They were driving a gray SUV. They were in front of us, and then pulled off to the side of the road and into a no parking or standing zone, near the sidewalk along the front of the stadium. In other words, they weren't supposed to be there. That's when a guy got out on the passenger side." Violet chimed in, saying, "I noticed that when the guy got out, he wrapped something around his wrist. I thought it might have been prayer beads, same as the other guy that blew himself up last night in the car wreck." Frank interrupted, "Violet, are you sure you saw him wrap prayer beads around his wrist?" Violet replied, "I think so. He definitely wrapped something around his wrist. Especially in hindsight, it seems likely that he might have been praying just before he got out of the car. He just stood there, next to the car with the door open, like he was afraid to leave." Frank asked, "Did you see his face?" "Not really," Violet admitted. "I just saw the side and back of his head. But I did get a good look at the driver. As Sam drove past the SUV, we were moving slowly, and the driver looked straight at me. The lighting wasn't great, but we were eye to eye." Frank was pleased and nodded with a smile, "Great. I have a detective that's a forensic artist, who I want you to sit down with as soon as possible." Violet agreed, "Sure. Anyway, I didn't know anything for certain until the suspect made a run for it. He ran when the police officers tried to catch up with him." "Just a moment," Frank said while reaching for his phone. He dialed a number, and he said with an urgent voice, "Sophia, can you come into my office right away? I've got a witness here I need you to talk to." He turned his attention back to Sam and Violet, and continued his questioning. "Have either of you seen these people before the bomb blast?" Both Sam and Violet shook their heads, with a no, their answers firm. On another subject, Frank began as he leaned forward with a concerned look, "I don't want either of you to talk to the press. Say nothing to anyone. All information about what happened tonight must be released through official press releases. It's important that we maintain control over what information is released, and when we release it. Can you do that?" Sam and Violet agreed with a clear understanding. Just then, a woman entered the office, and Frank introduced her. "This is Detective Sophia Jones. She's also a forensic artist. Sophia, this is Violet Wheeler." Violet got a very good look at the suspect who escaped in the SUV tonight. "Can you two put your heads together and come up with an image of what this guy looks like?" Sophia said with a smile, "Great, I can do that. Violet, please follow me." As Violet was getting up to leave, Frank said, "Sam, I'd like to talk with you a bit longer." Sam commented, "Violet and I are riding together. When we finish here, we have to go back to the fire station." Frank nodded, saying, "No problem, we won't be long, and she'll be right outside. When you're done here with me, you can go hang out with her and Sophia until she's finished." Back at the Johnson home, Mike returned to the kitchen. His face reflected his sad mission. Abby pulled him aside, her voice barely a whisper. "What did Max say? Did he find Dave?" Mike shook his head. "It's not good," he replied, his voice heavy with sorrow. Mike softly said, "Let's go into the living room. I'd like to talk to everyone at the same time." Being a seasoned pastor, Mike had a lot of experience with families that have lost loved ones, but it's never easy. He handed Abby her phone back as they walked into the living room. Abby's demeanor was already becoming more distraught, as she anticipated what Mike was about to say to everyone in the room, and that it was likely to be the worst possible news. Mike stood before the group, his voice calm and subdued. "Hey everyone, give me your attention. I just spoke with Mac, Abby's husband. He is with Davey, Julie's son, and they found Dave at University Hospital." Julie stood up with her eyes fixed on Mike, her face pale and drawn. Mike took a deep breath, then continued. "Mac told me that shortly after Dave arrived at the hospital, Dave passed away." Julie's knees slowly buckled, and she began to fall. Mike reached out to catch her, while Abby rushed to her side. Together, They gently lowered her back onto the couch. Julie's crying screams filled the room.
No, not Dave, not my Dave, she cried out, her voice raw with a shattered heart.
The television was still on, and the news announcer about to provide an update on the Alamo Center bombing. In a fit of heartbroken rage, Julie leaned forward and hurled a bowl of chips at the TV, cracking the screen. She yelled at the TV, "Shut up, you stupid man. Just shut up." Her voice was filled with crying anger. With tears in her eyes, Abby held Julie tightly, her arms offering strength.
"I got you, Julie. I'm not going to leave your side. Just sit down."
Julie's thoughts quickly shifted to Davey, and what he must be going through. She looked towards Mike, pleading with her voice filled with desperation. She said, "Davey, where's my son Davey? You said he was with Mac, where are they?" Mike calmly replied, "Yes, Julie, Davey is with Mac, and they're on their way here. Mac said they're about 45 minutes away, but they are coming straight here. They're traveling and on their way." Mike's wife Cindy was attending to Maria, who was lying on the couch, sobbing into a pillow. When Maria heard what Pastor Mike had to say about Dave, Maria raised her head slightly and compassionately looked over at Julie, as if to reach out to her in some way. But then she collapsed and closed her eyes again. Maria was completely helpless and broken. Julie sat on the couch leaning forward, and she cried out loud, completely unhinged. The room was filled with such overwhelming sadness that those that were there to provide comfort were also having a hard time maintaining their self-control. The damage set into motion by the terrorists was far-reaching, much further than just the victims at the Alamo Sports Center. Countless family members and friends of all the victims have been injured also, their lives forever altered. Like ripples caused from a stone that was tossed into a still pond, the ripples were continuing to grow. At the same time, inside the police command center, Sophia sat down at a computer terminal with Violet next to her. Starting from scratch, the forensic image process was about to begin. Sophia commented, "Thanks to AI, we should be able to put together a photorealistic image of the man you saw." She began by asking Violet questions about the suspect's appearance. Her voice was gentle, yet probing and systematic. As Violet described the man's features, the forensic software quickly began to generate multiple images, each iteration refining the likeness. Violet watched intently as the face of the terrorist began to take shape on the screen. The software even presented him in a shirt similar to the one she had described. Eventually, Sam emerged out of Frank's office and watched Sophia's progress as a silent observer, standing next to Violet. After about 30 minutes, Violet turned and said to Sophia, "I think that's him." Her voice filled with a mixture of relief and disgust. Violet added, "The image you and the computer generated, definitely, looks a lot like the guy I saw. It's very close." The man's face seemed to angrily stare back at them, the same way it stared at Violet just earlier that evening. Void of any compassion, it was the twisted face of pure evil, the product of a lifetime of hate-driven propaganda. This man wasn't just a common suspect. He participated in the brutal injury and death of many innocent souls, people he had never even seen before. He just wanted to murder people. Sam studied the image closely, then remarked, "So that's the guy. He looks like a really bad guy. We can keep our eyes out for him." Sophia added, saying, "Not only that, we can hand the image off to the news outlets, and his face will be everywhere. Plus, with all the cameras we have around town, our facial recognition AI might be able to identify him and alert us to his whereabouts." But then she cautioned, "With everyone on the lookout for this guy, there may also be a lot of people around town that look similar to this image. We have to be careful to not falsely accuse or harm the innocent. I'm certain we're going to get a lot of leads from this image, but only one will be our terrorist." Sophia printed the image on paper for Violet to take with her. As she held it, her thoughts went back to the harmless people that suffered so much carnage earlier that evening. Many of which survived, but suffered huge life-altering injuries. Violet angrily glared at the image with vengeance in her eyes. She remarked, "He's a monster. Somehow, we have to take this monster out." As Violet and Sam walked out of the command center, Violet grabbed Sam's arm to get his attention. With tears in her eyes, she looked at Sam. With a whimpering plea, Violet said, "Sam, I've got to go home. I can't take any more of this tonight. Let's get out of here before the FBI corners us. Sam nodded, understanding her need to leave.
I hear you, he replied. Let's get back to the fire station and go home, just keep walking.
With Mac at the wheel, the headlights of Davy's truck sliced through the night, relentlessly making headway as each minute ticked by. The intermittent illumination of passing streetlights served as a measurement of their progress. Inside the cab of the pickup truck, Mac and Davy were slumped in their seats, their faces weary with sorrow. Each man knew that there were no words that could make things better, so silence stretched heavy between them, punctuated only by the rhythmic rumble of the engine. They were caught in a holding pattern, counting the moments before this seemingly never-ending journey was over, while their cheeks remained damp from the occasional tear. As they pulled into the driveway of Davy's parents' home, there was the mutual feeling of, here we go again. Each of them knew that this was not going to be a good scene, a kind of heartbreaking task that they had to deal with, head on. Davy looked over and said, Mac, I don't know how I'm going to be able to do this. There is nothing I can say, or nothing I can do, that is going to fix this. I'm completely broken, and I feel so helpless. With a deep sigh, Davy added, I'm dreading going inside the house. With guiding words, Mac replied, Davy, nobody can fix this. It's just something you have to get through, with time, and it will take a lot of time. Mac stared at the house, signaling with his eyes he said, Right now, your mom is inside there, and she's broken too. Right this second, she needs you, more than anything else in this world. She just needs you to be with her, and together, you'll find a way to get through this. Davy nodded his head and replied, Okay, let's go do this. Davy quickly got out of the truck, then ran to the front door, and Mac followed behind. Davy threw open the door, and as he ran inside, he yelled, Mom! When Julie heard his voice, she cried out, Davy! She jumped up and raced to her son, and as they embraced each other tightly, together, they cried. Mac stood outside on the walkway, and was waiting for things inside to settle down a bit. Suddenly Abby ran out the door into Mac's waiting arms. They just cried together on the walkway, as they tightly held each other. After a long embrace, Abby lovingly caressed Mac's face with her hands, as she looked up into his eyes saying, Oh Mac, I was afraid I'd never see you again. Mac wiped away his tears, and shaking his head he replied, I love you baby, I got real lucky tonight, I was almost with Dave and Juan. With a half smile, Abby said, I'm so, so very happy to see you. But she explained, At the same time, I feel so sad about losing our friends, it's been a nightmare here all evening, ever since we heard about the explosion. Right this minute, I've never felt so relieved and sad at the same time. Sam replied, I feel the same way too, baby. Dave was like a brother to me, and Juan was a good friend too. I'm alive, but right now, I'm not all here. They embraced each other tightly again, and they continued to cry over the loss of their friends. Just then, Andre, Juan's 17-year-old son, walked up and curiously asked, What's going on with all the cop cars? Mac and Abby were so wrapped up dealing head-on with every hurdle all evening, they had completely forgotten about Andre. Completely oblivious of the events at the Alamo Center that evening, Andre had been home next door, playing video games online with friends all evening. Abby and Mac were caught completely off guard. As they looked at each other, their eyes had a silent conversation, and with a nod, they slowly, compassionately looked back at Andre. Without a word, they acknowledged that they were going to have to break the news to Andre, about what happened to his dad. A dark, sinister shadow hung in the air, and it was about to shatter Andre's youthful innocence, altering his life forever. Although the bomb blast took place in an instant, the aftereffects were immense and far-reaching, having been ongoing already for hours. The tragic shockwaves cascading through Dave's and Juan's family have been unfathomable, with still much more to come. Dave's daughters, Mary, living in Austin, and Jennifer, an airman stationed in Germany, were still in the dark about what happened to their dad. There were many more casualties at the Alamo Center that night than just Dave and Juan. For each life lost, and for every serious injury sustained at the Alamo Center, just like a web that connects people together, the damages are far-reaching and profound. Reaching far beyond those directly physically impacted, or emotionally devastated by the explosion. With each passing moment, the onset of outrage and anger was emerging across the entire nation. Everyone everywhere was following the news surrounding the Alamo Center terrorist attack. It was more than just grieving for those that were injured or killed. All Americans, especially football fans, recognized and felt a connection that what happened at the Alamo Center could happen anywhere, at any time, and that every American was vulnerable. In spite of the immense level of security of the Alamo Center, it happened anyway. In the face of this kind of diabolical evil, it was clear that the entire nation, not just San Antonio, was in peril, and together as one people, Americans felt the need to fight back. What happened at the Alamo Center would not be forgotten.